It's time for Taking Care of Business on Midlands 103. With thanks to the local enterprise offices of Leash, Offaly and Westmeath. Find us on localenterprise.ie and let's talk business.
Midlands 103.
Hello and a very good evening to you all. It's Tuesday the 20th of December. I'm Ronan Berry and you're very welcome to Taking Care of Business here on Midlands 103 in what is the last show of 2022. Hard to believe, but as the man before the break says, only 5 days to go until the big day itself. So, over the course of the next hour, I have assembled an absolutely fantastic panel of business leaders from around the Midlands. We're going to have a quick look back at what happened in 2022, see what the latest is for their businesses, and we're going to attempt to strategize and plan for what might be coming in 2023. Because, you know what? Things have been so, you know, solid, and, you know, nothing has really been happening in business circles for the last couple of years, you know. So we'll have a look and see what might be in store for that. And I have three people are staring at me now, shaking their heads, going, what are you talking about? If you want to get involved in this evening's conversation, you can do so, as always, by text or WhatsApp is the easiest way to get me here in the studio. That, of course, is on, the number for that is 083 3010 103, powered, of course, by the home of Offaly's top-selling car brand, Lamb Brothers Toyota, on the Arden Road in Tullamore. Love to hear your stories. And we're going to ask these people some questions over the course of the night, too, around maybe who their business hero for the last year might have been, or what business has really kind of caught their attention and why, and maybe is there a business villain? So if you'd like to play a part in that too, get on the text there and get in touch with us here in the studio. We'd be delighted to hear what you are thinking. So without further ado, let me introduce this evening's panellists to you. David Walsh Kemis is the current custodian of Ballykilcavan Farm in Stradbally. It's one farm. There's been 13 generations of the family so far, 383 years of history and counting. They recently diversified into craft brewing, and even more recent times, their products are now available in many European countries as well as locally here. And they've recently opened a visitor centre too, so he's definitely a bit of a glutton for punishment, but David will take us through their developments very, very shortly too. Also, I'm joined by Dr. Anne Cusack. Anne is the current chair of the Midlands Regional Enterprise Plan Steering Committee. And of course, many of you know, was the founder of Critical Healthcare too, a business that she sold in 2021. But she has far from decided to sit back and relax and enjoy an early retirement. Far from it, actually. You know, her involvement in the Midlands Regional Enterprise Plan shows her passion for job creation, for entrepreneurship, and for just supporting and helping to grow the Midlands of Ireland. She's heavily involved too in female entrepreneurship programs like Acorns and Going for Growth too. And our third panelist this evening is Mark Gibbons. Mark is the CEO and co-founder of Tappytag, based in Athlone. Mark himself has over 10 years of experience across a range of industries, from sourcing and distribution to brand building, both domestically and internationally. Since early 2020, Mark has been CEO and co-founder at the Athlone-based company, who are helping companies globally move their business to a digital and sustainable way of connecting. Folks, a very good evening to you all.
Ronan, how are you?
I hope you're all nice and settled now.
Absolutely.
David, I'm going to go to you first. 13 generations of the one family on the farm, and you know, you've diversified a lot in the last 3 to 4 years too. How has 2020 been for your business?
2022 or 2020?
2020.
Yeah, you see, I do exactly the same. I have to say, I have no idea what year we're in anymore.
Year,
it's, you know, 2022, the great thing for us, I have to say, was to be able to see tourists coming back in. And as you say, we opened the visitor centre this year. It was a mere 18 months behind schedule, but a lot of that obviously was to do with the pandemic and with the fact that, A, we couldn't get the thing built in the first place, and we didn't have the visitors coming in either. So we got it open in April 2022, and it's been very good. I mean, I have to say, I've been very encouraged by the amount of people coming into the country, and they're just so delighted to be here. Particularly the North American, Central Europeans, you know, they've been waiting to come here in some cases for up to 2 years, and you know, they're here and really enjoying themselves now. So from that point of view, it was great. You know, as you say, export sales for us is probably where the most growth potential is in terms of the beers, and that did shut down quite a lot during the pandemic as well, because people just weren't willing to take the chance that they were going to import beers and then maybe their bars were going to close or their restaurants were going to close. So it's just nice to be back to something like normality again. And I mean, as I say, I've nearly blanked from my mind the last 2 years in terms of what restrictions we were under or when bad things were happening to us. So it's now just looking ahead and seeing how we're going to go from here.
Yeah, even just before we came on air, we were all just having a quick chat how, like, at the start of this year, there was still a lot of quite onerous restrictions in place from a COVID perspective. I think actually only the last one were only lifted in the last week or two too. So look, you've gone from agriculture then into craft brewing and hospitality. And tourism.
As you say, glutton for punishment.
Yeah, exactly.
It's always nice to build something new as you're trying to get the first thing up and running.
No, I mean, I think when we started the brewery, we always felt that the tourism side of things was going to be very important for us because, like, as you know, beer in general is a very crowded space. Craft beer is a crowded space, but then you've also got the really big breweries that you have to deal with as well. So in terms of actually trying to find places to sell the beer, it's pretty restricted. And a small company like ours, we can't force our way into pubs because a lot of them are heavily restricted in terms of what they're able to stock. So for us, it was always a case of trying to find a way of getting people to come to us rather than us necessarily trying to get the product out to people instead.
And that, of course, that very issue and that fact was highlighted a lot recently when some of those big brewers issued quite hefty price increases on
That's the best thing that's happened. That's the thing that's put the biggest smile on my face in terms of what the big breweries have done to us over the last few years.
I know your business is, you know, it's deeply committed and passionate about things like sustainability, and we'll touch on that as we go to the show as well. But I have to pull you back wanting to Sunday evening, right, in a particular soccer match that happened and Argentina won the World Cup. You've links with an Argentinian soccer
we
club.
We do,
well.
Yeah. This is fabulous. This is a bizarre one. I have to say, they contacted me, and we'll probably talk about Twitter later on. They contacted me. There's a club over in Argentina called Williams Chemis. And it was actually, he was a 3 times great uncle of mine, I think. He was my great grandfather's brother who went out to Argentina. I think he wasn't going to inherit anything over here because he was a second or a third son. Went out to Argentina, place called Las Rosas. He founded the city of Las Rosas, and the club that was founded a little bit later was named after him. And they contacted me and they said, are you any relation to this lad? And I said, yeah. And to be fair, I did have to look it up. I mean, Chemis is obviously not a particularly common name. I did have to look it up. But yeah, I mean, and I have contacted them and they haven't got back to me. So I suspect they're all a bit busy at the
minute.
You
have a jersey though.
I do have a jersey. Yeah. I actually did buy a jersey, and trying to get Argentinian pesos into Argentina is quite tricky, but we managed it anyway. And so I have a lovely Williams Chemis jersey, and keep an eye on them in the division that they're in. But they're going well at the minute. And it's not even, it's a soccer club, but they do basketball, they do handball, they do all sorts of other clubs, other sports as well. So yeah, it's great. So yeah, I mean, I wasn't upset to see Argentina winning on Sunday.
The Irish influence across Argentina is huge.
Oh, it is, of course.
Admiral William Brown.
Absolutely.
So many Irish people have had such a significant impact over there. We're going to bring it right back down to closer to home here. Anne Cusack, in your current role, where did the mandate for that job come from? And I suppose, and what's the ultimate goal for the position you're in now?
Well, I suppose the mandate came, it was serendipity. I suppose I was in the right place at the right time, but I was asked, excuse me, by the then Taoiseach, this was back in 2018, it was Heather Humphreys at the time had asked me to chair the Regional Enterprise Plan for the Midlands. And I suppose the rationale behind it is that it is a bottoms-up approach in terms of all the regional stakeholders getting together and looking at what can we do for the Midlands in order to make it the best place to live, to work, to study, to invest and to visit. And at that point I was in the SME business, so critical healthcare. Myself and my husband had started that. And so as an SME representative, it made sense for them to have somebody on the ground chairing the steering committee. So the regional stakeholders involved are obviously the local authorities, the local enterprise offices, the IDA, Bord Fáilte, Enterprise Ireland, and obviously community groups as well as TUS in particular, the LOETBs, all of that. So they all come together, and we have a number of working groups that meet to discuss the various aspects around how do we create jobs within the region, how do we attract more people into the region, how do we train and retrain in particular, given that, you know, as a community we're most severely impacted by the just transition. So how do we retrain, reskill people in those communities to get back to work?
The formation of the Technological University of Shannon was a really milestone moment for this region.
Oh, huge. And I mean, it was so badly needed. But when you think about the vast community that it actually serves, but for the first time now, we're saying that we have the facilities across apprenticeships, lifelong learning, flexible learning, and actual degree courses that we can offer students, whether they're young, old, retraining, getting back into work. So it has been a huge valuable asset to have in the community.
I think myself, you know, and I know by talking to so many guests on this show over the past couple of years, but certainly the last 1 to 2 years, those links between academia, industry, you know, and government bodies and stuff, they seem to be really being, you know, drawn out now, and in companies, and everybody's beginning to see the multiple benefits of everybody working together and availing of maybe supports that are in place as well, using teams of researchers in the likes of TUS and then using that to then grow business too. So I suppose adding the Irish Manufacturing Research as well in Mullingar, like, so yeah. Midlands is, it's positioning itself very well to be a hotbed of innovation.
To be honest with you, I mean, when I came into this role, I have just been overwhelmed at times and completely surprised at how well the collaboration is between all these stakeholders. And in fact, recently I've joined the governing body of TUS, so I'm now seeing from the inside out, as well as having been looking at it from the outside in, to see the relationship building that goes on, the cooperation and the collaboration. But particularly because it's a technological university, it has a particular mandate to work with industry and looking to, you know, seek out those relationships to ensure that the courses that we're offering students are relevant to the enterprises that not only are in the region, but, you know, beyond this region. So everything is very relevant and being kept up to date with what we're doing. So yeah, the Midlands really has made so much progress over the last 5 years.
It looks like you're enjoying the role.
Yeah,
anyway,
I love it.
Sure. Mark Evans, as CEO and co-founder of TappyTag, you were on with me on the show, I think, about 7 or 8 months ago, and you introduced your products, basically very sustainable ways of connecting people. You can give us a quick overview of the products as well. But back then you were speaking about developing like CRM systems and all that. It looked like there was no stopping you. Bring us up to speed. Where are things with you at the minute?
I'm happy to say there's no stopping us still, Roman, so which is good. It's been a crazy year. It's been a really good year for us. And we've just gone from strength to strength. So in terms of the CRM system that I mentioned, we just finalised an integration with the NHS in the UK, which is going to be massive for us. That's something that we're looking to roll out, I think, around March time next year, which is great. We've rolled out with Irish Waterways then as well, with our asset management system that we were saying. So I think the business started off and was led by our digital business cards, which is kind of the foundation of the business, but it has totally expanded out from that. So into our, as I said, our asset management, our CRM system. We've now moved on to proximity marketing tags then as well. So for hotels, cafes, restaurants. There's so much stuff that you can do with, let's say, the NFC technology. What we're building in terms of the software behind that is, it's really, really powerful. Lots of big corporates, the likes of Deloitte, KPMG, they all see the benefits of using TappyTag as their kind of method of networking, lead generation. And it's a great journey to be on. It's absolutely fantastic. And moving, I think we'd only moved down the last time, Ron. I think we'd moved from
Dublin
to the Midlands. And as Anna's saying here, like, it's been so progressive in the last 5 years. I've seen how much progression it's made in the last 6 months, and I'm blown away by it. We were talking earlier as well, just about broadband. Even there's in terms of when we came up, I think the only broadband we could get was Imagine Broadband, I think, at the time, and it was 20 or 30 megs, which for, I think at the time, 6 or 7 people, wasn't great. Now we have air. We've got the Elon Musk version of Wi-Fi as well.
So many different options.
There's so many different options there. But for us, look, it's been an absolutely fantastic year, and we're really excited. We're pumped going into next year.
From a staff perspective, then, is there growth in that as well? And where's that going to go for you?
Yeah, so
I suppose, and I mentioned that at the time. We won't mention his name this time, but when there was, you know, a lot of attention in the media around some of the big tech companies letting people off, and lots of companies like yours put their hands up and said, guys, give us a shout, we need you.
Absolutely. And I think the, like, being based in Athlone, it's powerful for us. We're beside the college. So we took on some staff there just after the last time I was in. So we've now got we've 2 people in digital marketing, social media as well. We took on 2 people there. Sales, we've took on 2 people as well, all from the local area, which is great for obviously local jobs. And then we've got the lads who I'm sure they're listening in, John and Ivan, who are travelling up and down from Dublin down to, and they're staying in the Sheraton most nights, which they love. So just a plug for the Sheraton. It's absolutely fantastic for us to be based there. And in terms of the quality of people, and the quality of people coming out of the college, it's absolutely fantastic. And it's, So I'm surprised more businesses haven't looked at this before now, if I'm being honest.
Fantastic. And it's so important that people, you know, hear that message, even people in the Midlands too, because, you know, so many even parents are looking at opportunities, you know, where children might end up, while, you know, where their studies might take them as well. And sometimes we just need a reminding that stuff is, sometimes it's on our doorstep as well. Absolutely. And there's fantastic stuff happening. Time now to take a look back at the year that was. I'm joined by David Walsh, chemist of Ballykilcavan Farm and Brewery in Stradbally, Dr. Anne Cusack, chair of the Midlands Regional Enterprise Plan Steering Committee, and Mark Gibbon, CEO and co-founder of Athlone-based Tappy Tag. David, I'm going to go to you first. I mean, one of the most, I suppose, significant events this year, and it's probably put into significance maybe the last of the restrictions, how maybe, you know, things they weren't that bad for us when we see what happened in early February with the invasion of Ukraine.
Yeah.
We saw a fantastic response from businesses, the community as well, and a response that is still ongoing. But you took a very kind of specific response to do. You actually created your own, or brewed your own stout to try to raise some money for it.
We did, yeah. I mean, I think like everyone, when we saw the pictures coming back from, particularly, I mean, obviously now as well, but the early days of the invasion, it was such a shock really from, you know, peace in Europe for however long really, and then to see that those horrible images coming through. And it was really a case like, as a brewery, what are we going to be able to do to try and maybe help people out a little bit? So there was an initiative called Brewers for Ukraine, and what they did was they published a recipe online, and they suggested any brewery around the world who wanted to brew a beer with that recipe and then donate the proceeds to the Red Cross in Ukraine. So that's what we did. We picked up the recipe, we brewed a full batch of that beer, and I have to say, like, we got fantastic support from everybody. Like, you know, Petted Super Value and Athy supplying the beetroot, Penhouse providing the can graphics for free. You know, it was great. It was a great sort of community effort. But 100% of the proceeds, I think it was 4,500, we donated to the Red Cross in Ukraine based on that. And it was a beer that, I have to say, it's the first beer that wasn't our own recipe that we've ever produced. And none of us and I know we had this discussion before, yes, none of us are particular fans of beetroot, and I'm sorry to Fetterison and all other beetroot producers. But so we were tasting it, and I was in charge of deciding when there was enough beetroot gone into it. So I had to make that call. But it was, I think, I mean, it went down very well, obviously, because it was a charity that people wanted to do something to support, and that was a good way of doing it. Yeah. But the beer actually turned out very well in the end as well.
Yeah, and I have to say, I said that night, I'm a huge fan of beetroot, actually, and actually Anne-Marie Fury's, her beet bullets are fantastic.
Yes,
they are a serious product as well.
And they're very good for you as well, to be fair, anything beetroot related. So, you know, as you know, obviously we're not allowed to market beers as anything healthy or anything like that, but if you have to have a beer, that's one that you can pretend at least there's some part of it, you know, it's one of your five a day.
Of course, I mean, with all the fallout as well, and I mean the response that you know this country has given towards Ukrainian refugees, and I could have some numbers on that there in a couple of minutes, but it's thrown up a lot of other debates too, particularly around, say, accommodation, and there's, you know, particularly from, say, tourism and hospitality, there's question marks about, will there be, you know, hotels available for people to come, you know, visit the country next summer. But also, I mean, it's shone a light really on what is potentially a huge problem, is our own housing crisis here. And I know anyone listening that has younger kids, or kids who are at that age where they're looking at buying property, a lot of people are very frustrated and almost, you know, they don't see any future in getting a house because of the waitings are at present. As business owners, are you seeing that, or Anne, are you seeing that from businesses you're interacting with? Like, is lack of housing, I suppose, Mark, it's probably one for you actually, really, when you're trying to get people to come live in that loan, is it presenting an issue for you?
Well, yes, I would say so. I know from two of my staff there at the moment, they're house sharing with four other people. That's where they're at. If they don't have that, they're out in the street pretty much. It's a struggle. I've moved out of Dublin, which is, I know, probably I'm 33. Four of my friends, they're living at home. So there's a massive struggle to the housing crisis at the moment. For me, it's an emergency a little bit. That's how I see it. There's so many people homeless at the minute. And as a business owner looking at it, you'd love to be able to help everybody. That's how I see it. I'd love to be able to help everybody and be able to, let's say, do a little bit more for some people. But it's difficult because if we're talking about the war with Ukraine, the housing crisis, prices of bills going up, it's so difficult. It's so difficult. We'd love to be able to do more. Unfortunately, we can't. But it's definitely a difficult time for people who want to get a house in certain places.
Would you be seeing that echoed across the Midlands, Anne?
Yeah, I'm hearing it from all angles, really. I'm hearing it about students who are looking, whether it's to come to TUS or whether it's to go to Galway. I have one daughter in Dublin, and it took us 8 months to find somewhere for her to live. and rent a room with three others. I'm hearing it with other business owners like yourself.
Yeah.
In fact, with one company I'm working with, she has, her financial controller has a bedroom and a sitting room in her apartment let out to two new employees who have come from abroad to live, but they have nowhere to rent. So it's across the board, and it's a really big issue. And I mean, obviously everybody knows it's a big issue, but certainly I think there was even a report recently that the IDA are even having problems getting that foreign direct investment, because where are they going to put the people?
Yes.
Yeah. And I think Leo Varadkar was still tarnish at the time. He kind of acknowledged it as probably, I suppose, everybody kind of knew it was an issue, but when he was acknowledging it and given his previous position too, it was quite significant. That,
yes.
But of course, this isn't just a lifestyle driven thing. It's not that people just want a house. Like, we've got a rising a growing population, and it's tipped. So, like, I know, and I've often told people, say, who are maybe not from Ireland, like, that we once had a population of over 8 million, and it's predicted to get back to that in the not too distant future. Mm-hmm. So, anyone.
It's almost been a cascade of various things happening, though. I mean, you know, you have the war in Ukraine and the people coming in. You had a lot of returning immigrants coming home because obviously the economy in Ireland was starting to pick up and job opportunities were being created. I mean, we've had more entrepreneurs starting businesses over the last 5 years than we've ever seen before. So, and a lot of them have come back to do that because of the environment, or we all have, you know, families here, so they've wanted to do that. Mm-hmm. And then more and more people coming to study abroad as well, because we've got really good third level institutions now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a whole series of events that have caused all this surge in people looking for homes.
Yeah, and which is, you know, I suppose something over the years when you look at, you know, I think on the 1st of January, we're 50 years a member of the EU as well. And I mean, the decisions were made back then have led us to where we are. But I suppose that there are massive, massive challenges there. Have you confidence it'll be solved?
Not in the immediate future. No, I can't see it. I mean, I don't see where the housing stock's coming from. I don't see what decisions are being made now. That's good, because it's not something you can press a button and suddenly you magic up a whole heap of units for people to live in. Mm-hmm. I mean, my kids are 9 and 7. I'm severely worried about what we're going to do with them when they get to third level, which is however many years down the line. And, you know, obviously there's an awful lot of work needs to be done over the next few years to try and sort it out.
Yeah.
And I don't have any easy solutions. I'm not here sort of trying to offer any sort of anything that we can do to get it working. Like, but it does need to be.
We're seeing numbers being published of maybe, you know, the population growing by, say, 350,000 people a year.
Yeah.
The number of houses, maybe 80,000. Like, so there's a huge fall off there. And then you factor in disruptions from COVID and that very thing of material prices now in construction leading to housing. And that's another one for everyone. I mean, surely the cost of doing business this year, like, David, you've probably seen that more than anybody.
We have, and we were lucky in a way. We got most of the visitor centre materials bought before I suppose the lockdowns happened. So we had those prices paid at least. But I know if we were trying to build that now, we probably wouldn't be building it because the cost has gone up so much. Energy is the big one for us. Like, we're a relatively energy intensive business. There's a lot of heating of liquids and then cooling of liquids back down again. So that is really the one that's caused us the most pain this year. I mean, we had 11 kilowatts of solar panels on the roof. We've now actually upgraded that to 50 kilowatts. So that's a huge help. I have to say, like, it's one of the decisions we made this year that, in hindsight, actually has turned out really, really well, because we did that before the energy price went mad. We did it really from a sustainability point of view. But our energy prices have about 2.5 times what they were more or less this time last year, because we ended our contract at the end of last year and suddenly we got hit with a price increase of, you know, more or less 3 times. It started to creep back down again now, but the only thing really that saved us from an energy point of view is the solar panels.
Yeah, so at least it's definitely a silver lining.
It is, because
in terms of, you know, maybe the circumstances, like, I know a lot of companies maybe had to be even more reactive because they were just, you know, told their prices.
Well, I mean, when you see some of the, say, restaurants and hotels, and you see the, you know, pictures on Twitter of their energy bills in, you know, from, I was talking to someone who runs a computer server company, and his energy bill has gone up from 20,000 to 120,000 a month. I mean, how do you deal with that?
And interestingly, that sector as well, I think they reckon a lot of the debt or the tax that's been warehoused is attributed to kind of hospitality and tourism as well. So
there's
a double or a triple whammy coming. But of course, Ballygleclavin, you won the Excellence in Sustainability and Climate Action Award at the recent Laois Chamber Awards too, and a couple of national award nominations there too. But I see Mark is nodding in agreement with everything David is saying. And I suppose, as a tech-based company, people probably think, I know you probably don't really get impacted by this. You clearly do by looking at your face.
Yeah, absolutely. No, like, so we moved everything back to Athlone in terms of production. So With I won't say it, but with the lockdowns and all that's, I'm not going to say the C word. I don't want to. We've forgotten about it. But with all that, with like sourcing in China, sourcing in Asia, just wasn't an option anymore. So to get the business off the ground, we needed to take everything home. So we now have in our production facility, we've got two big massive printers. We've got a laser etching machine. We obviously have to heat up the office as well. We've got to turn the lights on. So it's you, when the bills come in, we only actually got the bill there the other day, but you are opening it with the eyes squinted, kind of going, please don't be too bad. I think Poppy Fields was one of the cafes just around the corner.
That's
from
right,
us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And her bill was astronomical, absolutely astronomical. And you're thinking, how like it's not a massive premises, but there's a good bit of footfall. But you're thinking, I always think like how does it go up that high? How is it that high? And you'll see there's a lot of businesses that just probably won't come out the other side of this, which is extremely sad.
There's a number of kind of predictions that next year we'll see an awful lot of, you know, businesses collapsing and insolvencies and a lot of small businesses too. But just when you see like say what David and Dave have done in Ballykilcavan there, you know, putting in the solar panels as big energy users, what often gets forgotten in this is a lot of businesses are actually very lean, so they're not wasting energy in the first instance. Yeah. So it's not that you can just start, you know, cutting it back. But and I suppose on a higher level then, if you look at even the recent announcement of Bord na Móna, a JV with an offshore wind energy company, like Ireland has massive potential to be almost a net exporter of energy in time. Will that happen, do you think, quick enough? And will that satisfy any concerns maybe that companies might have in terms of investing in Ireland or back into the Midlands?
Well, I think it will certainly attract the investment in, because I think, you know, when you look at what Bord na Móna are doing, you can see how serious they are about renewable energy. And I think in terms of when you look at other companies that are there almost supporting the likes of Bord na Móna, whether it's Mainstream or Statcraft, there are companies in the marketplace that are all doing Trojan work in ensuring that we're fighting for our place on the platform of producing renewable energy. So I think it will attract investment. I think it is already. And certainly Bord na Móna are leading the way.
Yeah, that transformation with them has been absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah,
so I think it'll be a case study that'll be studied globally in time. But massive. We're going to have to take another quick break now. Before that, David, I'm going to come to you first on this one. If I was to ask you to name your business hero of 2022, who might that be?
My business hero, I'm going to go local because we work with a fantastic company called BSL, and I'm going to pick Niamh and Rory Dooley, because I think what they're doing basically is taking spent grains, brewer's grains from the likes of us, converting that into a food product. So they're recycling, they're stopping food waste, they're recycling food. And I think that what they've done, they've set up a fantastic business. They're all far too young and photogenic for my liking. But apart from that, they're just the drive they have and the passion they have and the product they have. I think that they're doing a fantastic job.
And I think you've nailed it there with passion, because they set that business up like they wanted to do something with sustainability at its core. Mm. And they came across the spent grains. They'd looked, I think, at cockroaches and all sorts of things potentially.
Well, yeah, I have to say we don't produce cockroaches. No. I would like to point that out in case our environmental health officer.
But they were looking for an alternative kind of sustainable food.
Absolutely,
sort. And then they came across. I know, like they've got the academic background in
they
it
do.
As well.
Yeah,
and
they do.
Fantastic. I think a great choice as well. And you probably know Niamh Marie. Yeah, great business as well. So well done. Right, that's you off the hook for that one.
Excellent. I can relax.
I'm joined in studio by my panel this evening of David Walsh, chemist from Ballykilcavan Farm and Brewery in Stradbally, Dr. Anne Cusick, the chair of the Midlands Regional Enterprise Plan Steering Committee, and Mark Gibbons, the CEO and co-founder of Tappytag in Athlone. Now, before the break, I asked David to name his business heroes of the year, and he picked Niamh and Rory Dooley from BSL, a fantastic company based in Tullamore now, producing, you know, highly nutritious, high-end food from spent grains that come from breweries like David's and some of the many breweries across the Midlands. And that really, though, that question raises an interesting thing. Who are the business influencers? So if Generation Z were asked to name their business influencers, who would they name? Anyone, any suggestions who might be in the top 10?
Well, I'm going to look at Mark straight away, because at least I know I'm nowhere near that age bracket. So
go on, give me a couple there over top 10. Who was of the top 30 modern business icons among young adults? Who might they be?
Well, I'd say I'd probably go with more local ones, if that's all right, Ron. And I think because I asked the question myself, I wouldn't be crazy into social media, but having asked my lovely girlfriend, who might be listening, Emma, I did ask, who she would look at. Rosie Conlon was one that came up, and she's kind of gone from, I suppose, being a social media influencer. She was working with a number of kind of, let's say, fashion led brands, or Inglot was one of our makeup brands, to obviously getting a sense of, actually, I can make a brand here myself, and develop that out. She'd done that with Fortark, and she's done like an incredible job in growing a clothing brand from the ground up in the space of 2 years. It's an incredibly successful business now. Suzanne Jackson is another one. So again, very similar to what Rosie Conn has done. She's built her business from the ground up in terms of a makeup brand, and it's really, really, for any young kids looking up, I think, when I was growing up, it was, what career are you going to have? Nowadays, I think if you're looking at all these, let's say, social media influencers or anybody doing that sort of stuff, it's kind of, what careers are you going to have? Not a career anymore, it's what careers you're going to have. Because you can delve into so much stuff now, especially with, let's say, direct-to-consumer. You're like, I know it's so soon, she's working with the likes of Pennies. She has her direct-to-consumer model set up then as well, which is extremely powerful. But there's a lot. If you look at Conor Ryan as an example, as another one, he's set up a number of different coffee shops himself. He's a teeth whitening brand. He's lots of different businesses that he's just kind of gone, okay, I'm working with a number of brands here, but actually I can go and do this myself and become extremely successful from doing it. So there's so many of them.
And you know what? That is definitely borne out in this list as well. I mean, Rihanna tops it. I know Rihanna would have been famous actually as a singer and an actress, but has developed her own brand around that as well, and clothing and perfumes and everything. Beyonce, Marcus Rashford, Molly Mayhague, do we know who she is?
I think she was in Love Island.
I think she was, actually.
Oh, you watched every episode of that,
for sure.
The next one, right, David Beckham, Kylie Jenner. Now, in fairness, the Jenners and Kardashians, that is just an absolute vehicle for making money as well. Number eight, David, Elon Musk. So we finally have a business person in it, but it's quite interesting. But it goes on then down Ryan Reynolds, actor, Psy, I think is his name, KSI, I think that's how you pronounce it. Then Mark Zuckerberg is coming in, so it's quite interesting who the business icons that people chose are.
These are the high profile tech people.
The high profile tech people, their profile is a little bit, is it waning or growing?
Well, I mean, Mark Zuckerberg's keeping himself a little bit quieter these days because I think Mr. Musk has kind of taken all the attention over the last little while.
Yeah, because in fairness, like, to Zuckerberg, about 2 months ago there was suggestions that at one point there was only 4 people actually logged into the metaverse. I don't know whether that was true or not, and he put whatever 28 or 30 billion. He was actually one of them as well. But yeah, Elon Musk has definitely taken his taking the spotlight off him as well. So is Musk a genius? Is he going to solve Twitter? Is he going to make Twitter make money? Is the big question.
So I'm just going to say this, right? If this guy can land a rocket onto a ship, now I know he probably didn't do it himself. However, he's the face and he's heading it up. If he can land it onto a ship, he can solve social media. He can solve Twitter. He can fix it. I think even in the room beforehand, before we came on air, we were speaking about Twitter. I know people in the office, people at home, Twitter has been, since he's took over, I've probably spoke about it every day. Every single day I spoke about Twitter.
Yeah. That's not necessarily a good thing. I mean, you might talk about Donald Trump every day, but that's not necessarily...
He's still got elected. I know he's gone now, but...
Yeah, he's not going away.
He's not going away. But I think with Elon Musk, I just think there's... He's crazy, by the way. I wouldn't be a massive fan, but he intrigues me to see, okay, he's got Tesla up and running. He's got that going. You see what SpaceX is doing. You're using his Wi-Fi.
We are. I have to say, we basically gave up on attempting to get any sort of decent broadband in, and we are supporting him by using his Starlink system. I kind of feel I feel a little bit different. I think that he has a very competent team running SpaceX and Starlink, and I think that they're doing all that good work and just trying to not have too many crazy ideas coming down the line. I think Twitter's a complete, it's a different problem because it's not a technological problem. It's not a coding problem. It's a people, it's a group of people.
Yeah.
And how do you control that many people? And why do you spend $44 billion or whatever it was on it to have people just roundly abusing you the whole time? I mean, I don't know how you make it make money.
because I'm sure it's not making anything.
These valuations and market caps on them are huge, but I've never heard it said once that if a company is too big to fail, it's too big to exist. So the question there is, should one individual be allowed by a company like that, particularly one that's social media and has potentially huge leverage across the world? What would you think, Anne? Is it... Should people like Elon Musk, like, should it be allowed that one person can actually take over a social media platform of that size and scale?
Oh, I'm not a Twitter fan, I have to say, so I'm probably not the person to talk to, to talk about it. I suppose when David was speaking about it, I was thinking, you know, the Oscar Wilde quote, you know, better to be talked about than not talked about at all. And I just kind of feel that the furore that's been going on with Twitter over the last number of weeks, it is just like Donald Trump, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And I kind of feel the reason he's probably been pushed out of Twitter is, like, have you looked at the value of the Tesla shares? They are not doing very well. So I presume that it's not him alone, that his board are probably putting some pressure on to say, come back to work. You have a job to do over here, please.
Which is quite interesting, because he was one of the first to come out and say, everybody back to the office. So that leads us nicely into that whole thing of one thing that has certainly changed over the last couple of years is the way we work. I'm sure, Mark, your company are probably quite flexible in terms of locations and that. You're probably stuck on the farm anyway.
Well, it's a little bit tricky to make beer remotely, it has to be said, or to grow barley remotely. So a lot of the, you know, the sort of sales stuff can be done remotely, but yeah, it's more on site, I guess, with us.
Yeah, I think for us, we're remote where we can be. We can work from anywhere, apart from production. Obviously, production is, we can't bring the printers around. We've moved them 4 times in the last 2 years. We don't want to do it anymore. No, they're extremely heavy bits of machinery.
But actually, like, according to a recent report there, and these are based on CSO figures, 31,200 people aged over 15 usually spend over half of their week working from home. And that's just across the Midlands counties. So things are changing there as well. Again, Anne, is that offering more opportunity for Midlands enterprises?
It is, but actually the Midlands are already very well placed to be able to accommodate that flexibility that employers and employees are looking for, to be honest. So even this year, we've just published the Midlands Network of Co-working Facilities. So in every county within the Midlands, there are at least 2 hubs within those counties, main towns.
Yep.
So you've Co-Works in Edwardstown, you've the hub, or the junction here in Tullamore. So all, you know, there are plenty of opportunities for people to take a hot desk or take a week in a remote working.
Yeah, and this seems to be great impetus behind it as well. Again, there's more money available for further hubs to develop. And then, of course, the 4-day working week. Again, we won't look at the farmer on this one. The 4-day working week. Mark, is that something you've looked at? Is it something you're doing? Would you ever consider it?
Yeah, 100% we consider it. Yeah, no, absolutely. I think, like, to hold on to good staff or to recruit good staff, you need to have, I'm not going to call it a perk, but you need to have these kind of benefits that if it is a 4-day working week, if their life is going to be made a little bit better, their outside of work life is going to be a bit better, they're going to be happier in work, they're going to perform better. So absolutely, we'd look at it. I suppose COVID has really ramped up or how it's escalated, like, let's say, this remote working, because before, I remember growing up myself and being in my last job, to say, can I work from home? It was a big thing that was always a no. So COVID has really exploited that, and we'd absolutely look at a 4-day week. If people are happier to work from home and we're getting the most out of them, by all means,
As a business owner, I'd much rather pay people to get a job done rather than 100%. On how many hours they're going to do.
Yeah.
I'd much rather get the
productivity. What's always interesting, actually, if you talk to any companies that say do a 4-day week, they actually get the staff themselves to start looking at what they can change. And the first thing they always look at is meetings. And they reduce the meetings, the length of them, the number of them. And actually, secondly, is usually mobile phones, that you're not contactable all the time when you're at your desk as well. And simple. That's what the employees are saying. So it's not being driven by the management or that. Before the break there, I was speaking to my panellists, David Walsh, chemist from Ballykilkevin Brewery, Mark Gibbons of Tappy Tag and Athlone, and Dr. Anne Cusick from the Midlands Regional Enterprise Plan Steering Committee. And we're just talking about, like, some changes that are taking place in the workplace, maybe the way we work, the length of the working week as well. So Mark, I'm going to go straight to you on this one. What is the one thing that employers maybe really need to embrace or be aware of in 2023 in order to keep staff?
I think we just touched on it there. That 4-day working week, the remote working. I know there's just from friends myself who are working with big corporates and all across Ireland, that the return to the office is on the horizon, and they just don't want to do it. So they have to, they really have to embrace what the staff want. I suppose the staff have a bit of a leg up here in terms of showing their cards and saying, well, I'm working from home, or I'll go off somewhere else. I'll go to another company who is offering it. So I think the other thing that staff have to embrace next year is all around ESG, sustainability. There's a massive push. We see it with all the corporates that we're dealing with. And I suppose staff have to accept that. The day of staff saying no to sustainability and being that kind of leader within the company is gone. Everybody needs to do their bit, and it's definitely a key message for next year for any corporates or any staff members within companies.
And I think people are receptive to that anyway, in terms of staff.
Yeah.
You know, I think everyone sees that that's the way forward, and people will generally be pretty flexible on that.
Because a lot is changing there in terms of even employment law as well, like in the next year, like with things, you know, automatic enrolment in pensions, you know, entitlement to sick leave, potentially, you know, menopause leave granted as well. Like, things are changing very rapidly. Is that a challenge as employers, or is this something that really has been coming for long and just needs to be embraced and move on with it?
Well, I mean, I'm not an employer anymore, but I suppose the one thing we would have learned over the years was flexibility is key. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and I think that's probably going to be the buzzword moving forward for 2023, is that both the employer and the employee has to be flexible in how they're working. And I think when that happens, then a happy medium can be reached. So whether it is a 4-day week or whether it's a combination of working from home and coming into the office for certain days. And I think they all have a place depending on what one is doing within the team environment.
I suppose that flexibility and maybe that lack of, suppose somebody has to be in an office just to be seen there, to be doing their work as well. But actually, speaking, I mentioned the word menopause. Actually, Dr. Deirdre Ford has just texted in Mark to say hello to you and congratulations as well. One of your neighbours there. Yeah. And also uses Tappy Tag too. But actually, we got a piece from Deirdre earlier around the menopause and what she says, you know, it needs to happen in the workplace for people. And it's amazing. Like, she set up a clinic last year, a dedicated menopause clinic, that these things are becoming part of the conversation in work as well. David, speaking of conversations, there's a word begins with C that we haven't really mentioned all night. Are there any business terms that if you could just get rid of forever, and
well, actually,
jargon that you could get shot of, what would it be?
Pandemic wise, I mean, I think we've got a lot of new new phraseology. Pivot is my one, I have to say. I just I mean, I'd 110% get rid of pivot, and that's another one. New normal. But yeah, pivot is actually my top one. It's we didn't pivot to anything in particular. We just changed a few business practices and that seemed to work out okay.
Because actually the word permacrisis entered the Oxford Dictionary this year as well.
So
it's an interesting mindset. If you think we're in a permacrisis, then are we ever going to get out of it as well? Things are a lot more positive than that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mark, did you any words you'd get rid of?
I just had I'll try to. It's something we always had the two co-founders I work with, they were my old bosses. We always had a saying of just say yes and figure it out afterwards. So it was, we've always tried to stick to that, but I'll try to is something that always gets on my nerves. I'll try to get that to you tomorrow. I'll try to do this. It's give a timeline, tell them when they're going to do it, and let's get it done. So yeah, that's my phrase I would remove from the workplace.
Simple. So anyone that's listening and wants a 4-day week, you know what to do with it now. given your new role as well, are there any kind of companies or people there that you would have kind of hotly tip as ones to watch for next year?
But Professor, I'm going to give you my words.
Go for it. You have about 10 seconds.
Yeah. You're on mute, or can you see my screen? In terms of companies that I think I want to watch, I think is Hexafly, actually based in Westmeath. And I think what they are doing is just an incredible thing. So have you heard of Hexafly? So they basically take food waste and they transfer it into bio oil and other protein stuff for the cosmetic industry.
Fantastic. Again, coming up there, and that's a bit of, folks, we're out of time. This discussion has been so good. But, David Walsh, chemist, Mark Gibbons, and Anne Cusick, thank you so much for taking time out on Christmas week to come in here and be on the show. Stay safe and talk to you all again soon.
Thanks, Ron.
Thank you for listening. Taking Care of Business will be back on the 3rd of January, and we'll start off 2023 and keep the momentum going. Thank you for listening for this year. Talk to you all again very soon.
Taking Care of Business returns next Tuesday at 7 p.m. with the local enterprise offices of Leash, Offaly and Westmeath. Find us on localenterprise.ie and let's talk business.